I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
You're locked on to Hans Olsen and Scotty Chin.
That's right, yeah!
On 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Just let that music go a little longer. Is there a better intro to a song than this? Tim Lacombe joins us, as always, brought to you by Sperian. Are you a business owner? You have better things to do than to job hunt or scramble to find your next great hire. Let Sperian Staffing and Recruiting do it for you. Visit them online at Sperian.com. Iconic, is it not, Tim?
Very iconic. I love the ad that's running right now, where yes. Slash is trying out for the band. You know?
I know, right? Yeah. Where does he where does he rank on musicians, guitarists?
Oh man, I remember. I mean, certainly innovative. The Appetite for Destruction came out right in my wheelhouse, like 86-ish. Yeah. I didn't really discover it till 87, and when I did, it was like. I really do think it kind of changed my vision on a few things. but he's, I mean, it's hard like anything to say, you know, this guy's this or that. It's like basketball players. They have certain strengths. I think his, that intro is really, I mean, there's some dexterity going on there, you know, so certainly can move around the fretboard really well. And he's got a really good stage presence. Obviously he's a one-word guy, Slash.
There's certain albums that when you hear it, it kind of, especially when you're younger, when you're, you know, in your teenage years, and you hear an album, you're like, oh, okay, this is different. Appetite for Destruction is one of those, for sure.
Yeah, it had, like, you know, a lot of hard edge to it, but it was, you know, it was similar to kind of the, you know, the hair bands at the time were writing songs about love. They were like writing songs about love in all forms, right? The Guns N' Roses got in there, and they added a little more anger to the game, I think. And
a little bit more angst,
I don't know, but something about their full sound, dude, was just... I remember it blew my hair back, you know? I still remember it, even I think about it, and the hair stands up on the back. I'm like a music nut, though, so we could talk about this stuff all day.
So, you look at the stat line last night, and, it, you know, I was calling the Utah State game, and got home and then kind of was reading up and then watching a good chunk of the Jazz and the Raptors from last night. But I looked at the stat line before I watched the game, and I'm like, I don't know how the Jazz won this game. They get out, you know, the offensive rebounds, the turnovers. But tell you what, the Jazz gutted it out there in the fourth and probably won a game that maybe they shouldn't have.
Well, it's funny because I know you didn't listen to me on the post game because I was listening to you on the way home. So that's how late you were on. Listen to you and Spence, in fact. But I said the same thing. I mean, if somebody were to just grab the stat sheet and look at the numbers that you typically look at first, like, holy cow, you know, the offensive rebound numbers scare you to death. But just the number of shots taken. I thought the crazy stat of the night, Scotty, was they being the Raptors, had 41 more shots at the rim and restricted area combined than the Jazz. Jeez. And they only made six more of them. So that's kind of the wacky night it was. You know, a lot of stuff at the rim, a lot of tips, a lot of, you know, block shots, obviously. You know, look at Walker's line. But the Jazz shot the ball extraordinarily well, and the Raptors didn't. And really, that's the tail of the tape.
How concerned are you about rebounding with this team? Kessler's great, but other than that, there's not a lot of great rebounding. And we don't have huge aspirations for this team as making a deep playoff run, but how difficult is that to maneuver for Will Hardy and this staff?
Yeah, it's something that, you know, as it's kind of gone in spurts. I think early in the season they weren't great at it. I think they got to the point where it wasn't as big an issue, and the number, you know, defensive rebounding numbers started to move up. As of late, it's dropped a little bit again, and I think last night was certainly concerning. But with Walker in there, with Kelly in there, and with Lowry in there, you know, those lineups, those guys should be able to hold their own. That's big guys. I think just attention to detail, hitting, you know, Will talked about it, making sure you get a hit. You have to do that. You can't just assume or go try to chase the ball down because you're playing against big, big guys that have good instincts. So first thing you have to do is go hit. It's a discipline thing. I think they're capable of it, so I'm not overly concerned because I think where they have put their emphasis, they've gotten better.
I'm trying to find new and different ways to ask questions about how great Walker Kessler can be, because it feels like it's a topic of conversation every time we talk, but yet he does something new and it's like, oh great, we got to talk about this too. I mean, it's just, it's been such a joy to watch him and his accelerated development throughout the course of a season.
Yeah, it's almost like seeing what it would mean to have some Apple stock, you know, that actually went berserk. Because there wasn't a whole lot of expectation, you know. I talked to people around the league prior to the draft, and his name came up a bunch because he played so similar in so many ways to Rudy Gobert. And Rudy Gobert had just, you know, is coming off winning three Defensive Player of the Year awards. So I think that's worth kind of saying, hey, what is this guy all about? To me, Scotty, the part that's the most encouraging is he's so far out ahead of the game in terms of, you know, you depend on where you get drafted. Sometimes you can go somewhere and sit for a year, maybe only play mop-up minutes. But the fact that he's got all these minutes in these games that matter, he's flourishing, right? So you're starting to see development. And I still believe his offensive game is better than we think. I just think he's focused right now on, as Will says all the time, keeping it fairly simple. There's a lot to just ball screening and rolling, from angles to timing, all that stuff that, you know, the average fan would have no idea. So I think there's more good things to come on the offensive side, too. I really do.
You go back and people forget Rudy Gobert was in the G League for a while, didn't get a lot of minutes, and maybe that was, you know, a little bit on Tyrone Corbin, not throwing him to the Wolves early on, but his development wasn't anywhere near what you're seeing in terms of speed and acceleration is what you're seeing from Walker Kessler right now. And that's what I think has got people really excited, Coach, is the fact that he seems to be so ahead of schedule as to what we would have expected. And I'm with you. When that trade went down, I'm thinking, okay, looking at all the firsts, all the pick swaps and everything that came along with it, Vanderbilt, all right, you know, that's cool. And you look at, you know, some of the other players that came over. And then, oh, yeah, there's this rookie that they picked, Walker Kessler, you know, big dude out of Auburn. But, okay, whatever. You know, let's talk more about the picks and the players. We had no idea what this guy was going to be, and that's what makes it so much fun. I think that's what got people so fired up about this.
Yeah, and honestly, across the board, I mean, what guy that the Jazz brought in has been disappointing? And the answer is none, right? I mean, very rarely do you just absolutely thrash a trade like that where you get all those picks, and really that was what everybody talked about early. And if you remember, and I was talking about this, but Ainge, when he makes a trade, you got to look at all the components because, you know, he couldn't necessarily pick the picks for these teams, but he knew who they drafted. And so, you know, the Jazz had intel on an Ochai that they really liked. They had intel on Walker. Now, to the point that he is, no way, because I don't think anybody had that. But anyway, just fascinating stuff. And Walker, right before our eyes, like last night, he made another play that was just crazy. He literally blocked a one with his right hand, batted another way or way with his left hand, then sprinted out in front of the play and ended up finishing an alley-oop dunk. And so, to your point, like Rudy Gobert was nowhere near that in year one. And yeah. I love Rudy to death, but we all know what it took for him to get where he got. And that's why this is like, holy smokes, you know, it's pretty good stuff.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
You buying Ochai Agbaji stock right now?
Yes. And not like, you know, not to be a superstar, but you watch games that you watch around the league, you know? I mean, it's the guys in the shadows sometimes. You know, the pieces that the Warriors had alongside them that were just solid, a Kyle Anderson type guy. You know, as you watch the kind of the playoffs develop this year, watch for the, you know, maybe a guy like Desmond Bane. But you need those guys. And I think he's a guy who the Jazz, you know, can use all day long, a very physical guy, can guard his yard, is becoming a very good corner three-point shooter. Now, you know, working to try to become a better above-the-break three-point shooter. But love his mindset, love his attention to detail, and I love, again, the way Wills brought him along. You know, didn't give him the keys to the car from the start, worked with the G League, went through the process, and now all these things are starting to pay fruit.
Tim Lacombe joining us right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Just how difficult do you think it is when you're trying to play and stay focused and do everything you can, but you see your name being dropped in trade rumors right and left? I mean, I guess Conley's been dealing with it for a bunch of years, so it probably doesn't matter to him. But I got to imagine that's a difficult distraction, trying to stay dialed into what your responsibilities are.
Yeah, and it's just talking to guys, you know, through the years. It's definitely something that you have to be mentally strong about. Ultimately, I think the key, and really what I've been told, is you focus on the fact that you've got a deal. You know the situation you're in. You don't know the situation you're going to. And that's the scary part. But oftentimes the situation's better. I mean, look at Lauri Markkanen. You know, he traded twice. And, you know, the situations were different both spots. But he gained a ton. I think he gained a ton of insight to how the league works and what it takes to be a pro, you know, in his first stop in Cleveland. And then, in Chicago. And then, I think in Cleveland, to be able to get out on the perimeter and be able to play a wing. And we see that paying dividends right now, right, off of the summer he had with the Finnish national team.
I anticipate later today Lauri Markkanen is going to be named an All-Star. Would you agree with that?
Not just yes, but hell yes.
Hell yes. And deservedly so, too. I mean, it's so has this always been in his bag, or did it just take the right situation, the right coach to coax this out of him?
No, I think we're all a work in progress, and we're all kind of a sum of our experience. And like I said, I think he owes a ton to the process. One thing I did hear about him, you know, from a bunch of people growing up was his dad was hell-bent. Any team he ever played for, he was not to be like the old typical, he's the tallest guy, so he's going to play center. He would want Lowry to play guard, and he would kind of negotiate that going in so that when he got to a place, it was a given and they wasn't going to get stuck. And if a coach told him up front they would do it and didn't, he'd move him. You know, so he played for a lot of teams. But, you know, his dad's persistence to – because it is his ability to be a threat at all three levels. He's got the shot at three, now the shot fake and drive. We've seen the powerful dunks, which blow me away. You know, I wasn't quite ready for that. And then, obviously, his ability to post up and kind of play in that mid-range. So, a guy that was, you know, thrown on the scrap heap a couple times, goes to the All-Star game, and I still think his best years are ahead of him, which is even more exciting.
I want to talk a little college basketball with you. Utah State gets a nice win last night. Utah is seeming like they've turned a corner and are improving under Craig Smith. BYU has some struggles, and the thing about BYU that is, I think, maddening a bit for Cougar fans is that they have looked so good. Now, granted, gut-punching, heartbreaking losses to St. Mary's and Gonzaga, and I know you had a close view of that St. Mary's game, and then difficult losses outside of that. Where do you think the hang-up is right now for BYU? Is it just simply they can't shoot right now, or where do you think what do you think is slowing them down?
I think it's in a word. It's consistency. I mean, the one thing they've been all year long is competitive. You know, they had that little stretch where they lost a couple games that they were frustrated about with South Dakota and UVU. UVU, yeah. I went and watched them the other night, Scotty. That's a real team, man.
Oh, I know.
Holy cow.
I love their big man. I love that I forget his name, but the shot blocker is great.
Yeah, he's Aziz Bandago. And
yep.
I'm telling you, dude, that dude's a pro, like a real.
Yep.
That's a real dude. So anyway, I think more than anything, BYU's competed all year long. I thought they'd been ultra prepared. I think they got behind the eight ball personnel wise a little bit, like we did a couple times, where you've just got to roll young guys out there and or inexperienced guys out there. And sometimes luck shines upon you and you're able to win enough that the confidence can kind of roll. And sometimes you're not. And, you know, it's those two games is so frustrating because they had both those games won. And I thought BYU did an awesome job in both at preparing and being ready to go. But sometimes it's just how the game works, and it's why everybody's chasing trying to win for good, right? Because it's so hard to win at all.
Well, Coach, you're the best. Always fun catching up with you. We're all a little cooler when we do get to hang out with you. And thanks for your time.
Hey, I got a date we can start to think about for the Hounds operation in town. It's going to be in August.
Nice. The Hounds are back.
Yeah, so we'll publicize as we go.
I love it. Hey, appreciate it. Hey, those jobs still available? I know you're trying to fill 100 spots. That was a great gig you were talking about.
Yes, actually the one right now, that one, you know, we've got a really good pool going for that one I talked about before. This one now is we need some customer service in Utah County. If you speak Mandarin Chinese, we can use somebody and got a great opportunity there. So reach out to Asperion.com/Utah, or you can always reach out to me on Twitter. I'm they're trying to call me the fairy job father, but I'm fighting it.
Visit them online at Sperion.com, Sperion.com/Utah, or just find Tim on Twitter. Send him a DM. Those DMs are open. Slide right into those DMs, and let's get you a job. Love it. Thanks, Coach.
All right, Scotty. Thanks, man. See ya.
You got Tim Lacombe right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
I'm Dave Cauley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.